the community of Israelis and the strength of Israeli people, it's very strong. I don't think we have that kind of unity in the U.S. I know we don't, actually. Seeing that was just hell yeah. I felt proud of that and inspired by the Jewish people and the Israelis. I also experienced a level of frustration that this conflict is still going on. Right around the time I was getting bar mitzvah, one of the Israeli soldiers got kidnapped into Gaza and the body got thrown out of a window and the guy pulls his hands out covered in red blood. And I see all the people coming around to stomp on this soldier's head. And I grew up having IDF soldiers stay at my parents' house. Like they were like brothers, cousins. And I punched the wall and I was so angry and I hurt my hand. I couldn't understand the level of hate. I didn't know it existed. I knew that there was teasing and bullying and black against white in the US and those types of things. And I remember Nazis, but that was the first time where I really saw hate, people stomping on a dead body. This cycle of hatred needs to stop. It just needs to stop.
This is Listening to Understand, where sensitive Jewish truth seekers gather in a safe place for candid conversations on challenging topics. When we listen to truly understand and not in order to respond, we can replace judgment with curiosity and open our hearts to every Jew, regardless of their personal choices. As Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. I'm Atana. Let's get started. I recorded this episode with Rob over a month ago. A lot has happened since then. 4 hostages were rescued. We had a lot of losses in Israel. Soldiers that died, heroes that died, families that were changed forever. I was humbled the past 2 weeks to spend 10 days with Einav. Einav is a mother to one of the hostages, Ori Danino, Ori ben Einav Efrat. She went around America speaking. I was really privilege to be witness of her courage, of her strength, of her resilience, of her emunah, of her faith. She went around morning to night speaking on different stages, schools, synagogues, communities, podcasts, from big communities to small communities to retreats to big and small platforms. Everybody greeted her with the same way, a hug, tears, and speechless. And she gave courage to so many people to live with faith. When she is the one that's going through the anguish, not knowing where her son is, when will he be returned? How is he doing? It was an experience that I can't put into words. I'm still processing it. We had the great honor of meeting Ben Shapiro in his studio. He walked in, he looked at Einav, and he said nothing. Looked at her with pain, with such humility. And he said to her, "How can I help?" And just with pain in his eyes and was listening, he was truly listening to every word that was coming out of her mouth. She speaks Hebrew. She doesn't speak English. He tried to understand as best as he could. Then we went to different communities and the same thing, from little kids to adults that were 90, just listening and crying, hugging, witnessing somebody else's pain. Sometimes we cannot fix somebody's pain. Sometimes we cannot fix what is broken. And sometimes we don't know what to do in order to hold space for someone else's pain. But bearing witness to somebody else's pain and saying you're not alone is something so great. And I was so humbled to be a part of this experience that was really one of the biggest 10 days of my life. Rob Moore did the same when he went to Israel and created this documentary film on grief, loss, resilience, hope. And I think we all experienced it this past weekend when we heard about the 4 hostages being rescued. And then a moment later, we hear about that the head commander, Arnon Zamora, that was leading the troops to this incredible mission of rescuing the 4 hostages, was killed. How do you hold space for both grief and gratitude and hope for the rest of the hostages to come back? How do we do that? Rob explains it in this film. We're going to hear about the production of the film and his experience in Israel and why he decided to gift his time in order to go create this film, to inspire others and to maybe even be a part of bearing witness to others in their pain. No 2 griefs, no 2 losses are the same. I hope you take time to watch a documentary after you hear this episode and share it with others. We would love to hear your thoughts. Enjoy this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listening to Understand.
Today, I'm excited because I feel like I'm going to learn more than I'm going to listen to understand. I feel like I'm going down an education episode. Rob Moore, thank you for joining me here.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everybody. I'm Rob.
Rob is from California. Rob is an award-winning filmmaker. Rob lost his wife. Rob is a single father. Rob is a Jew. Rob is a lover of Jews. And Rob understands grief. After October 7th, Rob went to Israel to show what's behind the scenes, what people are not seeing, and to maybe have a similar voice of grief that could be in different voices and different shapes and different sizes. There's a saying in Hebrew, Imo anochi betzara, I'm with you in your suffering and your pain. And one of the big beliefs that we have in Judaism is we might not be able to fix the pain or to move the pain, but we can sit with you in the pain. And I think a lot of Jews are feeling it nowadays in the world. I know that one of my things that I often say in my home, and it was more loud right after October 7th, there are Israeli hostages. We lost so many Jews. How can we fill in the blank? And it's this mixture of emotions. We want to continue to be grateful and live. At the same time, there's so much suffering. How can we? And I think it's a big part of Judaism. Imo anochi betzara, I'm with you in your pain. What you did in creating this feature film.
I take you on a journey for an hour and 12 minutes and you leave changed after watching it.
So it's a documentary about grief, your own experience of grief after losing your wife.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a little bit about my story. Thank you again for having me on. This is great. This is the first of hopefully many podcasts. And thank you, Matana. My Hebrew name is Moshe. Moshiko, they call me when I go out to Israel. I am a widower. I'm 36. I lost my wife, Noelle, to ovarian cancer when she was 31. So it's been about 4.5 years. She left behind my daughter and I, Leah. Leah just turned 7. Grief is what I talk about. I have a TikTok and I talk about grief and talk about recovery and healing and light comes from dark and like how to overcome just the unthinkable, like really painful thing. Noelle was literally like, we met when I was 23. We fell in love. We got married at 26. We had our child at 29. Like it was flowing. Like it was a beautiful life. And I miss her every day. And I really do. I do miss her every day. And I'm also in a new relationship and I'm a single dad, but also, you know, loving being a dad and loving seeing my daughter grow. And yes, there's longing and missing Noelle, but I think grief in general isn't really covered as much as I think it can, it could be, because we all will experience death in some form or the other. And then after October 7th, I was literally just like, what is going on? Israel is under attack. So many people got killed in the worst imaginable way. And now there's hostages. And what was alarming to me is not many of my close friends in the US were like speaking out about it. And not many were like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And this is happening. And I wanted to make a film because I really just wanted to go to Israel and show solidarity with the Israelis. And that it just evolved into making this feature-length documentary called Echoes of Loss. And you can watch it on YouTube right now. And it just evolved into kind of sitting down with bereaved family members, hearing their story, and sitting with them and holding that grief with them. Because I am going through it. I'm just 3 or 4 years out from where they are now. And someone early on in my grieving process, his name's Mitch, he came into my life so randomly. He was a widower and he just sat with me and we had lunch and he helped me and sat with me and understood what I was feeling and also showed me this glimpse of light that it would eventually get better or it would be okay. And as soon as I connected with Dan Luxenberg from Rova Media, he was like, dude, I have these connections to some widows. Maybe you could sit down because you're a widower. And I was just like, let's do it. Let me sit with these people and hear their story and humanize what they're going through because grief is universal. And that's how the film came to be. And then it evolves, as you'll see in the film, it starts with widows, then it goes to bereaved moms and bereaved parents. And then I talk to a brother who lost his brother and the full spectrum of grief. I also go to Hostage Square and interview some of the team from Bring Them Home. It's ongoing. It's still going as we record this. Everything is still very much happening.
What made you become a filmmaker? Let's start there. And how old were you?
So when did I become a filmmaker? I started off as an actor. I started doing high school theater and was in all the plays and loved it. Just really loved it. I loved acting. I loved getting up on stage, and it felt like one of the only places I could be really present was when I was on stage. And then I'd say my senior year in high school, I started shooting funny videos and just joking around with my friends. And then I ended up going to NYU, Tisch, for acting. And while I was in college, I decided to do this producing minor because I liked business too. And I liked numbers and budgets and just like knowing that side of the business as well. And I'd say filmmaker, the title, I've only been calling myself a filmmaker for maybe the last 2-3 years, honestly. Been a content creator, I've been an actor, I've been a producer. I have a production company and creative agency called Tall Boy. Does very well. And I think filmmaker is now, when I think of creative Rob, it's all encompassed in filmmaker.
Well, and what do you think was your perception of grief before you went to Israel? And what did you learn once you went to Israel that you were surprised?
So something I've said on my TikTok channel quite a bit, everybody has their hard, meaning like everybody has hardships. And a lot of times I post content and people will be like, well, it doesn't compare to what you went through, but I'm really struggling with this. And they almost like apologize for feeling bad for something less than their wife or husband dying.
True. So
and I'm
true.
Just like, don't judge your heart. Like everybody has their heart.
Amen.
And I always come at it with, if it's bothering you, that's okay. Like you're justified in feeling shitty about what you're feeling shitty about. And I think going to Israel was a different level of
hard
that I just have not experienced. Cancer is hard. I went through the cancer issue for 2 years. I was in the trenches with my wife. It was hellacious. It's not war. Noelle's sickness was not politicized. There was nobody being like, oh, she deserved to die. Oh, good. Everybody was mourning with me. This conflict in Israel is, people are like celebrating the death of these people. That is just unbelievable to me. And that is something that it's not right. And I didn't experience that when I sat down with anybody that I was interviewing, but I feel it in the States. This lack of understanding.
Especially California.
Yeah.
Right? I don't have TikTok, but you said you're on TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm assuming TikTok is not really pro-Israel with like the voices are not so pro-Israel on TikTok, the big influencers.
No, the big influencers on TikTok are not pro-Israel. I've had to distance myself from TikTok and Instagram over these last 7-8 months. And then I come in and I come back and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Or excuse me, whatever. I want to share what I'm thinking. And if I offend somebody, that's okay. You have your right to be offended. And what you do with that is what you do with it. But I really strongly believe in like the North Star that I'm following. And I also acknowledge it's very complex. I do. But yeah, there's some friends that were in my life that are not in my life anymore because of just how they responded to October 7th.
So you have to set boundaries and...
Yeah.
Yeah, which is so fascinating. Somebody I'm very close to is a Muslim. And when October 7th happened, I was in Israel. And she reached out and she said, I was embarrassed to ask you how you are. And I was afraid to ask you are. I don't think what Israel is doing is okay. But I love you and I care about you. And we made it a point that we're not going to politicize it because we wanted to cherish the relationship because it was important. Because we saw the human in each other, but I don't know if I could do it with everyone. I don't know because I know who she is in her heart. And I often say, I think she's the only one that I could do it with, that I could say, okay, let's not talk politics. Let's just see each other for who we are. But when somebody, for example, Gabor Mate, when he started talking against Israel and I was friendly with his son, I had to unfollow him. It was too painful for me to hear. Yeah. It was too painful for me to hear. Because we all know somebody that either died during October 7th or is a hostage or has family members that got wounded. So it's hard to... There's a difference between saying, I don't think what Israel is doing is right, but I don't understand, versus going outright and bashing Israel when you don't live there. When you don't live there.
Or just don't have that much skin in the game or any skin in the game. Right. I have family members living in Jerusalem. I have cousins who are in the army. It's very close to me. And then to like some of my friends who have no stake in the game, but obviously want to be vocal and support peace, which I'm not saying I don't support peace. I support peace. I just know that what happened on October 7th in terms of murdering 1,200 people and kidnapping over 200 requires a response. And
it's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
And that fundamentally was... That's just what I'm sticking with. I'm not a war expert. I don't know anything about what's the actions. And I know it's hellacious for Palestinians. I know that. And I also know that you have to respond. You have to respond and you have to eliminate Hamas. That's like what you have to do it at all costs. Because otherwise this will happen again. Or right. Something like this will happen again. And that's unacceptable. So... I think that amongst my really close circle of friends, there's just an understanding of reality that is aligned with how I feel. And that doesn't mean that anybody who can have their own opinion, but I can also silence them and unfollow them, or I don't need to see that.
Yeah. Did you decide to do this film in order to see their experience in grief, or to be able to give them a little bit of, I get grief and I'm here with you in the mud, and part of healing is sitting in the mud with someone else?
I truly, Matana, like I went out, Matana, I went out there for a solidarity mission. Mm-hmm. It was initially just my Chabad rabbi, Rabbi Hanoka, was like, we're going to Israel. You want to come? It's with mm-hmm. JLI. And I was like, I don't know. Do I want to spend the money? Do I want to go? Is this the right time? And then I was like, I need to go on this trip. It's important for me to go and show solidarity.
Yeah.
Book the trip. And again, like I'm a content creator. I have my camera. I was like, I'll shoot something. I'll shoot some 10-minute YouTube video. That's what it was, of just like the trip. And then I told my friend Dan Luxemburg, I was like, hey, I'm going to Israel. Should I shoot something? And he was just like, dude, let's talk. And he was the one that planted the seed of like, you're a widower. I have contacts with these widows. What if we did a piece about being a widow? And he was like, we were originally going to do it with this other influencer, but she's not a widow. So it didn't seem authentic. And as soon as he said that, I was just like, I'm in. Like, I'm in. If you can even give me 10 minutes with a widow and I can sit with her or him, widower, and I don't know, spread some light, hear their story, I'm in. And that's literally how it started. And then I was like, maybe I should rent a second camera. Mm. Maybe I should have a plan.
Were you doing it alone? Did you have any help?
Like, so I had Ellen Johnson Chaim. She was working freelance with Rova. She's a producer based in Tel Aviv. Amazing producer. She was running the show. She was like, you go here, you're going to interview here. And I was like, great, I'll be there. And that's just how it evolved. And then she's like, oh, I have this opportunity to take you here. I have this opportunity to interview with this person. I was like, great. And I made every appointment. And then in post, Alexis Lopez, who cut the film, we like figured out the story. And I recorded all this voiceover to take us through 8 days in Israel and how it like evolved.
Wow.
And it all happened on the 6-month anniversary of October 7th, which I think was meaningful, because hopefully this will be, God forbid, we're here in October, but who knows? And yeah, that's just how it evolved. And then once it went from widows, my producer was like, would you be open to interviewing people who are not widows, but also lost family members on October 7th? And I was like, yes. And then that evolved into a bigger exploration of grief and what it's like losing a child versus losing a spouse.
How many people did you interview?
I think I had about 10 contributors, six of which were bereaved, seven bereaved. And then I also sat down with the CEO of One Family, the CEO of IDF Widows and Orphans Organization, and then one of the heads of Bring Them Home as well.
What is Bring Them Home?
Bring Them Home is like it's a hostage forum. It's a movement trying to do a worldwide campaign to free the hostages that are still at large, which I believe is like 120 something, 125.
Yeah. Is it a nonprofit or is it just a media?
It's a nonprofit. I don't even know how it works. It's a global campaign. They have headquarters in Tel Aviv. I went there in the film, and they are doing everything they can to advocate for the release of these hostages. It's insane. It's been 225 days or something.
Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the feeling in the streets when you said you've been in Israel many times before, and then you come after October 7th. What was the feeling? Was there any major difference? What was the inspiration or what was the pain?
So there's a couple moments that stood out. I'll start with a bad moment and then I'll end with a good one. A bad moment was on day 5 of my trip. It was about to be Shabbat. Shabbos was coming in. And a man just saw me with my camera on the street. I assume he was Arab. I don't know. But he spoke like incredible English and he like almost looked American. And he's like, take pictures because this is the end of Israel. This is the end of IDF. The Nazi regime will fall, talking about IDF. I was like, excuse me, who are you? And do you live here? And he's like, do I live here? And then he went on like a crazy person a little bit. Like I could tell something was off and I just casually walked away. But it really stuck out to me because I was like, wow, this rhetoric is even in Israel, like in Jerusalem, like this negativity.
Wow.
And I shared it with my cousins that we had Shabbat dinner that night and they're like, oh, whatever. He's crazy. I felt a little uneasy. I don't know. Like Israel, I've been there so many times. It's always been such a celebration. So much food and travel and family and fun and dancing and history and spirituality. And this was just a different kind of trip. I don't think obviously Israel has changed, but Israel's still amazing. It's absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. The resilience of the people was like astounding. We were dancing at Nova Festival after hearing testimonies from October 7th of surviving and seeing murder all around. And then we were like, you have to celebrate. You have to celebrate life. Let's bring joy back. And then we were dancing and it felt natural to dance. It didn't feel forced. It was like, we're still here. We're celebrating. The Jewish people will survive. And then I remember I went out to dinner in Tel Aviv. It was like my last night in Israel. And I sat at the bar and there was like a group of women having, I don't know, just a girls' night out at this great Italian restaurant in Tel Aviv. And they were just like joyously having a night out. And it was just happy to me to just see Israelis are resilient and you guys are fighting for your survival. You're fighting against an entity that wants to erase the Jewish people, Hamas. Politically, it's getting more and more complicated and you're still like having you're still having life. You're still having simchas. There's weddings. There's more babies being born. There's dinner parties. Like Israel is very vibrant and Israel will survive. And I feel that wholeheartedly and it has to. I'll do everything in my power to make sure. And I'm sure you will too. But there was a sense of mourning that I hadn't felt in Israel. On this trip, there was just a sense that I had never experienced before.
Like a lower vibration of living alive.
Yeah, just how you would be your first year after losing a spouse or a family member. Your vibrations would be lower. And if they weren't, something would be wrong with you. People would be like, are you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if the country was rejoicing and feeling like nothing happened when it's literally actively happening, we'd be like, that's insane. Israel's so small compared to the U.S. So I know we sometimes conflate October 7th with September 11th. Yes, it was terrible. It shook our whole country. But I don't know. It's just, it's so much the magnitude of October 7th to the Israeli society is way bigger than 9/11 was.
Yeah. I recently met one of the hostages' moms and we became very close. And I think I spoke to her right before Yom HaAtzmaut, Independence Day. And a part of her said, how can people celebrate when my kid is still there? And mm-hmm. I heard her, and one of her things that she keeps on saying, I don't want anybody to forget my son is there. I don't want people to forget. And there's a danger with going back into life. And I think the difference between grief of death and the unknown of hostages is that there's no ending. The anguish is, they're both awful, right? Atrocities, hell. But I think what she was trying to say is we're still not ending. We're still in the war big time, and my son is there.
Yeah, so I talk about it in the film about this exact thing of when somebody dies, you have the Jewish methods of burying the dead in 3 days, sitting Shiva for 7 days, Shloshim, where you don't celebrate, you don't shave. And then it jumps up all the way to a year of doing all the holidays without this person. And when you have active family members who are, you don't know if they're dead, alive, in terrible conditions, I equate it in the film to similar to this on-edgeness that I felt after my wife got diagnosed the first time. Because the first time she got diagnosed, it's okay, cancer is now a part of your life. And when you hear cancer, even if it's stage 1A and everyone's like, yeah, 90% survive and it'll be fine, you're like, it's cancer. Cancer comes back. Cancer right. is with you. You right. have to, you're now a part of that community. And when she first got diagnosed, I had a 4-month-old baby.
Oh my God.
It was like the colors of the world changed. Like, I remember the moment sitting in the ER room with the baby in the stroller, and they're like, we just took this image and there's this neoplastic mass inside your wife. Turns out to be a cancerous tumor that grew to the size of a football. Then she undergoes surgery and chemotherapy, and everyone's like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be great. But deep down, you're like, what is it? Is it good or not? I do not understand what any of these family members are going through with hostage. I cannot imagine the grief, the turmoil. All I can do is send my strength and love to these people. And I can try and empathize through the lens of, without knowing a finite answer, it's hard to then begin mourning and to begin accepting and then to begin grieving properly, because the acceptance is a huge part of grief.
Yeah.
And with this unknown about the status of your loved ones, it's, you cannot accept. There is no acceptance. Maybe it's a nuanced acceptance of accepting the unknown, which may end up happening, God forbid, where we don't ever know. And that's a possibility. But there will be, I interviewed some family members of hostages, or one family member of a brother of hostages who were returned in November. And his whole thing was like, I'm in the fight right now. And I think relating it back to cancer, we were in the fight for 2 years. We were like, we will do whatever we can. We will go to every chemotherapy, radiation, every surgery. Noelle was just an absolute warrior. And our family fought to keep her alive. And she fought to stay alive because she wanted to be alive for our daughter. And to the point where it was like, she just fought until her last breath, truly. And that's what you do, I think, for these family members who have, do not give up. Continue fighting. Do not give up, period. Whatever it takes. I had lunch with a friend the other day, a Jewish guy. He's like, you know, should they really be doing this to the Palestinians? When is enough? The hostages, who knows about the hostages? I'm like, are you on drugs? Well, do whatever you can to get these hostages back.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Do you set a precedent that you can come into our country, kidnap our kids, kidnap our women and children, murder people, and then we're not going to come after you until every single person is accounted for? Absolutely not. You cannot set that precedent.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about it. And it's terrible. War is terrible. And I talk about it in the film. War is the worst. And I've never experienced war. I'm a filmmaker. I went to liberal arts school. Did right. theater in high school. I've never carried a gun.
Right.
I don't even know how bad war is. Right. War is terrible. You have to keep going. You have to fight until, in terms of the hostages, that's how I feel. You have to go the distance, and it's painful. And it could all be solved if they were returned.
Right. When you were in Israel, did you feel like a stronger desire to move there and say, you know what? America's like, it's like a fake land of Tinkerbell. Is it real? And should we really, as a Jewish person, we should really be in Israel. That's the place to be. Did you feel a stronger desire to come home?
This was one of my first trips where I felt a stronger desire to leave and go back to the U.S. I was exhausted. I wanted to get back to my bed. I was emotionally exhausted. I wanted to be in Southern California.
But it was comfort. It was a really tough trip.
It was a really tough trip.
Do you think that it was tough because of the stories, or was it tough physically, or also like the anxiety? Will a war break out? Was the second
literally
part of
like
the war?
That Saturday was when the Iran shot all those missiles. So I got back to the U.S. I flew out Tuesday night and I got back Wednesday. And then Saturday was the 300 missiles from Iran, which if you think about it, like, that's insane that happened.
Yeah.
Because if there wasn't the Iron Dome, hundreds of thousands of people would have been killed. Tens of thousands. I don't know. I'm not a missile expert, but tens of thousands of people would have been killed. So I was just really ready to come home. I came home and like my girlfriend nursed me back to health for 2 days. I got to see my daughter. I'm really happy to be back. That said, I'll be back in Israel probably next month for a screening of the film. And I love Israel. I can't wait to go back. It's different going where I'm like shooting a documentary by my own. That was exhausting. And one about grief in the middle of an active war zone. It was just a lot.
One of the things that I'm experiencing, and I'm wondering if you're feeling the same, and I'm wondering if a lot of our listeners that are not living in Israel. I grew up in Israel. My whole family's there. I'm the only one that lives here. My parents live there. My whole family lives there. And I was there on October 7th. My daughter's there in a gap year. And we tried to leave as soon as possible when the war broke out to get the kids back into structure and to, like we said, like part of me said, like, how can I abandon my country? How can I abandon my siblings? How can I abandon everybody and just go back into my comfort in America? At the same time, I see my kids in terror every time the siren's going off. And I remember when we landed in America, my kids, my little one, my six-year-old looked at me and he's like, oh, wait, we don't need to listen to sirens anymore. There was like this switch of, oh. And I looked at him and he's like, we're safe. I said, Mishael, I know it feels safe here, but I'm telling you, we're not more safe here than in Israel. And my heart really believed that. And what I'm getting to is that I feel like we're living in this fake denial, and there is a guilt that I have. I'm such a proud Jew, but I'm not going to be there to fight the fight. I'm going to live in my comfort zone in New York, of not hearing the sirens, of what looks like fake comfort. So I'm going to hear about what's going on in the college campuses, and maybe people are going to spit at me at the street. But I don't think a missile will fall on my block. I don't have to. I remember when I went to sleep, I'm like, oh, I get to sleep the whole night.
Yeah. See, that's something.
The dichotomy. It's a dichotomy.
Yeah, because thanks for sharing that. Like, I've never been in a rocket attack. I've never had to run to a safe room. I can't possibly comprehend it. I used to say, I lived in New York City for a little bit, and I would go to Israel and I'd feel safer in Israel than in some parts of New York. Mm-hmm. And people would be like, are you crazy? Like, how do you feel safer there? I'm like, because it's my people and we all take care of each other. And yes, it was scary riding the bus for a little bit. I was always worried about a suicide bomber.
Right.
When I was in Jerusalem, I still get worried some parts of the old city that I walk around in the Arab quarter. And I'm like,
glancing.
I think that fear is okay. That's part of the reality of what is going on there. And I don't know what the solve is. I will say that I do feel very safe in my community and in the U.S. And my daughter's safe. And I feel safe practicing Judaism. And
I do feel safe in California.
I started since my trip. I bought a Star of David necklace, and I've been like wearing it out of
proud.
My shirt.
Proud.
And I'm waiting. I'm anticipating a moment where somebody's gonna be like, you Jew? Are you a Jew? oh, you believe in killing babies or genocide? Right. And I'm going to be like, I know it's coming because I don't look Jewish. Like, I'm like a tall white kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to wear a high necklace in college and high school. And I remember an Uber driver, this is before Uber, but a taxi driver in San Francisco was like, oh, you're Jewish. Of course you're something about the price of the ride. And I was like, pull the car over. I'm getting out.
Wow.
Like, I have no issue in standing up, as any minority should. Like, any minority. I don't know what Black people go through, or Hispanics, or the LGBTQ community. I don't know. I just know saying that you're Jewish now is like some political statement.
Right.
Saying that you support Zionism is now like something terrible, which, when did that happen? And I want to stand proudly against what I know and believe in. And I shouldn't have to apologize for that. I'm not trying to fight anybody. I'm not trying to even upset anybody. But if you instigate, then you're going to be put in your place. I'm not going to cower away and be like, oh, I don't want to offend you.
Right. But I'm wondering if, like, I'm sitting in my comfortable house in America while my siblings are worried about maybe their income and will their businesses fall apart or not. There's so many details of, well, my niece's husband is in the army for 7 months. What's it like to be a new mom of a baby being pregnant again without her husband home? Like, just that.
For you and for me, believe me, there was a fiery time in my adolescence where I was like, maybe I'll go join the IDF and make Aliyah and fight terrorists. And the reality is, like, exactly what you're doing. You do this podcast, you're an outspoken ally, like, you're doing what you're supposed to do. I feel guilt all the time that I could be doing more, help the Jewish people more, help Israel more. But a big part of making this film was like, I was like, how many Instagram stories can I post until I'm like, am I even doing anything of meaning? Or am I just yelling at my friends who already are aligned? And sure, I lost maybe 500 followers on Instagram and I wish them all well. Right. That's okay. You don't need to see any of my content. It's okay. But for me, the film, going back to the feature, is like, all right, I got to do something a little bit more for me to sleep better and feel better. And I have to say, it's helped me so much in terms of my relationship with October 7th and what's going on in Israel.
Yeah. And that's so profound because I think really everybody's going to have their own like mixed feelings. I just told my husband yesterday, I don't remember the last time that I wasn't in Israel for 7 months. Unless I was pregnant in my later trimester that I couldn't fly. I'm married for 22 years. I don't remember, but there was an emotional block for me that said, don't go back, not out of fear. You know what it was? Out of embarrassment. I was embarrassed because I would say, what can I already do if I go for, let's say, a week? I can't leave my kids for more than a week right now. What can I already do? Like, I'm useless. I really felt useless. So I felt like, how dare I felt that? And it was a subconscious. I didn't even, until I thought about it, my daughter's in Israel there for the year. She's like, Ma, how did you not come? I said, it didn't even enter my mind.
Again, though, like going back to this idea, like you can't judge yourself when you're grieving. So like you got hit by October 7th.
Exactly.
Everybody who has any inkling of Jewish connection, Israel connection, got hit by October 7th.
Right.
We are grieving. We're all mourning and we are grieving.
Right.
So that's how you responded. And the trick is not to judge it, not to judge the way you are coping, because everybody's coping in a different way and it comes in different stages. It comes at different times. Literally this morning, my mom's in town visiting for my daughter's birthday. She had a really emotional weekend missing my late wife.
Yeah.
And she's just like, it's really hard for me. It's bringing up a lot of emotions. I miss Noelle. I wish Noelle could enjoy this life that you're building with Leia. And I'm at a place in my grief where I'm like, yeah, of course I miss Noelle. And I've been so dark. I've been literally had to pull me out of bed. It was really bad for about a year. And now I'm just like, I want to enjoy life. I still have my sad moments and down days, but this weekend was a really great birthday weekend in my, like, it was the first Leia birthday I've had in a very long time, if ever. Because her first birthday, cancer was already involved. So it's been like a 7-year journey and it's still going on. Grief is forever and it changes colors and your relationship to it changes. And It's death is not talked about, and we all experience it in some way or the other.
Yeah. And I wonder if your experience with the birthday with Leia was more intense because you were experiencing such depths of grief with Israelis when you went to Israel, that you came back and you chose to live alive in the moment of celebrating what is, because you saw the atrocities and the outcome of it, and you came back and said, it would be not okay to celebrate this moment of her birthday. I wonder if the subconscious of, wow, I get to have a birthday with my daughter.
There's a woman in the film named Mindy who works at One Family who sums up the film beautifully. She's like, look, we have to find joy. It's a mitzvah to be happy. And I've thought about that sometimes. I've had rabbis tell me that before, and I'm just like, shut up, okay? Let me feel.
Yeah, and also when it is a time and place for everything, like kol zman va'et, you
right.
know?
It's like, come on, dude. All right, I'll be happy, but let me be sad.
Yeah.
But there is truth. You can choose happiness.
It's a choice. That's what I'm saying.
It's a choice, and it's easy. When it's easier to choose happiness, that's the best. When it's harder to choose happiness, you have to train your mind to be like, okay, let me go into my gratitude list. What are good things that are happening in my life? Let's focus on those. And also acknowledge that when you're in the trenches, you're in the trenches. Like, survival mode is real. So that, I'm not saying if you're under rocket fire or gunfire, you should just be like, everything's going to be all right. It's like, no, you got to survive,
yes.
get
yes.
out of the trenches.
100%.
But it's this like grieving part afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuanced. Feel sad when you need to feel sad. Feel joy when you need to feel joy. And try not to feel guilt about feeling any spectrum of your feelings. And it's something I deal with every day, literally every day.
And you're dating somebody now. So
yes.
It's probably even hype more, like you have to tell yourself, don't feel guilt. I'm sure that voice is louder now.
My girlfriend is just, I've been able to be transparent with her. Hey, I have sometimes these down days where I'm just triggered by something and I get really in my feels and I miss Noelle and I might get a little distant. And she's been so receptive to that. And she's so appreciative that I could even communicate that with her.
I can express it.
So that she's not like, wait, am I doing something wrong?
Exactly.
And then I'm like, you have done nothing wrong. You're awesome. Yeah. I just listened to some song earlier and it made me think about this time I went to the Coachella Music Festival with my late wife. And now I'm thinking about that and I'm just in that memory and it's bringing up all these emotions. And instead of me showing up normally, I just can't, because I'm like paralyzed by this like weird memory that just came because some song came on my Spotify or something. Who knows? So I think for widows and widowers who are trying to get a new partner, that understanding is paramount.
And I think communicating it is maybe the beginning. One of our friends lost her husband to cancer and she had little kids and she met her husband, which wasn't a husband at the time. And he said, if we get married, I want you to know I'm not replacing your husband. I will never replace your husband. I will never be a father to your children like your husband was their father.
That's right.
But I can love you in a different way. I could be of service maybe to your children. We can build a family, but it's never going to be instead of him.
Correct.
And she said that she felt so safe because it was different. And different is what we need.
Yeah, it's nuance. It's not like dating somebody who has an ex-girlfriend that they broke up with. When somebody dies, I still think, what if, or what could my life have looked like if Noelle was still here?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to feel those feelings and share when I'm not 100% is really helpful in just me just existing and trying to like enjoy life. And also it creates space for this new love and this new chapter of love. And who knows what life her and I will build with my daughter. It's all good. It's really all good. And it's a timing thing too, because you can't start a new chapter. I tried very quickly. I got into another relationship really about a year after my wife passed and it escalated quickly and it was a wonderful person, but I still had so much healing to do that I was like, just not, I just wasn't ready to like let go without comparing, and then be able to say, okay, like there is this new beautiful chapter that is developing. And it took time, it took me substantial time. And then once that openness came, it was like, then I met somebody great. Wow, this is okay. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah. But it's time, as you said.
It's a combination healing. Of time, acceptance, therapy, mourning, grieving. Like you have to feel sad. You have to like mourn. And yeah. I'm telling you, for 2 years after my wife died, I did not properly mourn. And then all of a sudden it hit me. And for a year, I was unwell. And then I made my last film, Ghosted, because I was so unwell. And like I needed to get these feelings out through art. And once I did that, I started healing a little bit more. Then another year passed. And it took about three years from her passing for me to really go, okay, like life's okay. It's going to be all right.
What's the difference between grief and mourning? What is the importance of mourning? Because you said I needed to mourn. I wasn't mourning. What do you think the importance of it when it comes to healing and be able to go to the next chapter?
I think mourning is like a real deep, visceral, physical feeling of like, that's your main objective is mourning. Like you are in it. And I think that's why the Shloshim is so valid, because it's like, those are your 30 days to really just sit in it. And I didn't really understand it when I was going through it. And I think grieving is like, it just comes up. It's just, they just fizzle into your emotions. And all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I'm grieving right now. Like whereas like mourning feels just like deeper. Yeah. It's just, there's a heaviness to mourning. You're still in it.
It's more intense.
More
condensed, more.
And you're also still like dealing with like the burial or Shiva. Like you're still like putting their stuff away, or you're transitioning. And then mourning is like that. It's the transition. And then grieving is like what you live with for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how I would describe it.
Yeah. And that's why they say grief, there's no recipe. There's no way to do grief. It's each one is individual, because it comes and goes and it doesn't end.
It doesn't end. It's not a time will heal. It's a time will change. But you live with it. And I think that the more we have education and programs and communication about grief, and not this, oh, you're going to be okay sometime. No, somebody who's diabetic is diabetic. Somebody who's an alcoholic, they're an alcoholic. There's no cure for these things. You live with it the rest of your life. If you lost your leg in war, you lost your leg. So you figure out how to live with one leg. And sometimes you're like, fuck, I want my leg back. And then sometimes you're like, I can't believe I just ran that 5K with one leg. It's like, yeah. I think about my daughter growing up. I'm like, she's doing great. She's doing awesome. And it takes a village, and life is good, thank God.
Yeah. What is something common that you saw in Israel with all the families that you met? Is there something that you could say, wow, this was interesting. I saw it in all the interviews.
I think everybody who invited me over to their homes, Elliot, Sigal, Menashe, Hannah, there was such a warmth and welcoming to me in their homes that I don't know if I was interviewing people in the States. I'm sure I would get a warm welcome. I think that welcomeness was a beautiful feeling. And there was a lot of gratitude from these families being like, thank you for doing this. Thank you for sitting with us. Thank you for filming this. Thank you. And that stood out to me for sure.
Oh, were they all from the day of October 7th? Were they all murdered at like the Nova Festival or Be'eri or something like that?
So... I interviewed two widows who their husbands were police officers in Sderot, and they got killed. Mom and a dad who lost two daughters and a potential son-in-law, Amit, from Nova. Yeah.
I literally put it down on my list. I saw her speak the other day.
Yeah,
she wrote
amazing.
A Sigal. Letter. She wrote a letter like reading out like the... Oh my, does she live in California? Because she said that she lived in California.
She lives in LA for 20 years with her husband, and then they moved back to Israel.
Where were they living? Where do they live now?
In 20 minutes outside Tel Aviv.
And the kids, their two daughters were in the Nova Festival.
Yeah.
And she has one son, right? That 13 or something like that. Shy. Yeah. I remember because Matana and Shy is a synonym name. And I because Shy means gift. And she said in her letter, "You're my gift." Wow. She is. Wow. That letter that she wrote, I think it was like to them or about them, the something that she was reading out was beautiful.
And I haven't seen her read the letter, but that's her way of grieving.
Yes.
Like that is helping her. Similarly to me making this film.
Yes.
It's helping me.
It's processing. It's processing. Yeah. Everybody has their own way of processing the grief and you have to go through it. There's no there's no jumping over it. And one of the I want to go back. I'm going to make a point afterwards, but I want to go back. So who else did you interview?
Hannah Katzman, who her son was murdered in one of the kibbutzim. Elliot Young, who his brother Netanyahu was a lone soldier who got killed. Sigal and Menashe, their two daughters. And then Sima and Hani, who were widowed. And then I interviewed Yael, whose husband died in a terrorist attack 6 years ago. She works with one family. And Shlomi, who's the CEO of IDF Widows and Orphans. And then Chantal, who's the CEO of one family. Eitan from Bring Them Home. I interviewed a lot of people. It was a lot.
What's One Family?
So One Family is an organization that was set up 23 years ago after the Sparrow pizza attack.
Oh.
And it was started by a mom and her daughter was like, I want to give my bat mitzvah fund to help these families of the terror attack. And essentially it's an organization that helps bereaved family members from terror victims. So terror attacks. So it talks to widows, widowers, parents of the widowed, parents of those who fell, kids. It helps with programming to help those who are grieving specifically from terror attacks. Wow.
What a beautiful meaning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing organization.
Wow. So they do these weekends and these programs and stuff like that for healing and support. Because I feel like one of the hardest thing is that there's this void that happens and you're constantly in the place where it happened. I was speaking to a friend of mine and I said, my grandfather came to America right before the Holocaust to make money to bring his wife and two children over to America. He never got them back. They were murdered. And he stayed
so
he left to bring them and he never was able to go back. They were killed. And then he went to Boston, got married, and had 9 children. And I wonder if the fact that he wasn't... Now, I don't even know how he started a new family. But I'm wondering if living in the place of the hell is so much harder to heal than going to a different place and rebuilding. Because a lot of people from the Holocaust left Europe or went to Israel, Australia, America. Now, they weren't living, I can't say they were all living a happy life, but they rebuilt. I'm wondering if the people in Israel will have such a hard time because they're living in Israel.
It's a great point. So environment is a huge part of any kind of habit, right? You can change habits by changing your environment. You can also have triggers of grief because your environment is part of that trigger. So my wife literally passed at her parents' house. I was sitting with her. And even to this day, when I walk into the room where she passed away, I'm just like, whoa, it's a lot. At the time, we were living with my in-laws while she was going through chemotherapy. And after she passed, I was like, I gotta get out of here. I need to get my own place. I remember a friend of mine who, his wife passed. I had to get rid of all the furniture that we had. I got all new furniture because everything was just like triggering. And look, I went to Kibbutz Kfar Aza and a lot of the residents there are like, we're not leaving. I'm not leaving my homes. Like some of the people were like giving tours of the devastation. And it all depends on like how you, I don't know if there's a right way. I know that my mother-in-law didn't change the background on her phone, which was a photo of her daughter and my daughter for 3.5 years. And I was like, I was waiting for her to change it. And she, I just noticed recently she changed it. I was like, good.
Yeah.
So I think environment is a huge part of just triggers and, but I'm not, I don't want to say don't protect yourself from the triggers. They're going to come. It's just going to come. I think the most useful thing is having a community of loving friends, family, your work understanding, your workplace understanding, and then also connecting with other people who are grieving.
Mm. Finding like the connecting support.
Yeah, because they understand it in a different level than like your best girlfriend.
Yeah.
And one of the widows I interviewed, one of her friends was like, hey, it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right, saying to her friend, because she wants to comfort her, but she doesn't understand. And then Seema is like, it's not going to be all right. Don't say that to me, even though her friend's trying to comfort her. And I understand that. But I think surrounding yourself with other people who have experienced grief or are experiencing grief is very important. And I will say, I felt in Israel, whatever the politics are, if you're left, if you're right, whatever, if you're religious, if you're secular, like everybody is standing up for each other. Everybody is supporting each other and everybody's fighting right now.
Right.
And that brings back this feeling of family and that it is one big family.
Yeah.
The Jewish people.
Yeah.
And people are fighting in the States too. We're trying to raise money. We're trying to get events together.
Right.
We're making art, we're doing exhibitions, we're doing concerts. Like, it's tough.
And it takes a village. It takes literally a village. Do you know Arki? He is a soldier.
Arki. I know him.
So Arki was like, he's on Instagram and he was in Kfar Azza a lot and he would send messages.
Well, I think I saw this guy.
Yeah. I interviewed him and his wife and he came to America now on a speaking tour. And he was like, basically, his point is everybody has a job.
Yes.
And we don't, and the jobs are not the same. So figure out what your job is and do it right. I hope I'm not messing up his message, but basically just because I'm in the front line and I'm leaving my family to go, his job was to pick up the dead bodies and put them in a truck. Wow. And he said, just because that's my job doesn't mean that's your job. But, and don't sit in the pitiness of what's going on. Go do something that you're good at and let's continue as a nation doing our jobs. If it's supporting each other, if it's PR, if it's filmmaking, if it's cooking, if it's speaking out loud, whatever it is, what are you good at that you can bring to this collective atrocity and war that we're going through for the better good of the Jews?
It's, yes. Like I'm not a rabbi. I can't, that's not my thing. I'm also not a soldier. I'm not a diplomat. I'm just a filmmaker, single dad, widower who like understands grief. And to me, the film was healing for me because I needed to see what was actually going on in Israel, what actually happened on October 7th. I wanted to bear witness. So glad I did. I'm so thankful.
Yeah, bearing witness is so huge, right? So huge.
And I'll never forget that, ever.
So huge.
It'll fire me up because this isn't the last time we're going to be fighting. Like,
right.
That's part of our history is we fight to survive. I'm glad I went. I'm glad I saw it. I feel very educated. I feel like I could communicate with pretty much anyone under the sun. And I'm also glad I captured it in a way that humanizes grief and humanizes Israeli grief, which, I mean, on some of these arguments and some of these Instagram posts, it's dehumanizing Israelis on a level that I'm like, you guys are so dumb. And that's really it. The stupidity is, you can't argue with stupid. So I'm really trying to, in my film and in doing press and PR and social, I just want to lift up the Jewish people, lift up Israelis, and in that, heal a little bit, heal myself.
Yeah.
Hopefully heal some viewers, give them a glimpse of hope. And that's really it.
Mm-hmm. What was your biggest takeaway?
Biggest takeaway? I guess the two things, like the community of Israelis and the strength of Israeli people, it's very strong. I don't think we have that kind of unity in the U.S. I know we don't actually. And seeing that was just like, hell yeah. Like I felt proud of that and inspired by the Jewish people and the Israelis. I also experience a level of frustration that this conflict is still going on. I remember and right around the time I was getting bar mitzvahed, I was like 12. So this might have been the second Intifada. But one of the Israeli soldiers got kidnapped into Gaza and the body got thrown out of a window and the guy pulls his hands out covered in red blood. And I see all the people coming around to stomp on this guy's soldier's head. And I grew up having IDF soldiers stay at my parents' house. Like they were like brothers, cousins. And I remember I went into the other room. I was like 12 or 13 and I punched the wall and I was so angry and I like hurt my hand. Like I really punched this wall. And I couldn't understand the level of hate at that time. I didn't know it existed. I knew that there was teasing and bullying and black against white in the US and those types of things. And I remember Nazis. But that was like the first time where I really saw hate, people stomping on a dead body. This cycle of hatred needs to stop.
Right.
It just needs to stop. We are done. Let's evolve. Let's evolve past it. Whatever it takes, let's just evolve past it. I don't have the answer. But it needs to stop.
Yeah.
We can't be doing this in 20 years. Come on. We can do better.
Right. I'm going to end with a few questions.
Sure.
That I'm curious about. What's your relationship with God and what does God mean to you?
I was joking with my team the other day. God and I go way back. I think I started talking to God, had a relationship with God when I was very young. I think it was personified through my mom's dad passed away when he was very young from a heart attack. He was like 46. My mom was very young. I was young. There was always talk of spirituality and life, not life after death, but like death and heaven and God. So I remember cursing God when my dog died when I was little. I'm like, God, please. Oh, and I don't think of God as this entity of up in heaven and like puppet master. I think of there is a creator of the universe and I don't know what he or she or it is. And I know that we're all connected and I believe in energy and I believe in positive things lead to more positive and negative leads to more negative. And so I think God is extremely nuanced. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I connect to God through Judaism. That's how I connect to God and through the Jewish holidays. And anybody who connects to that vibration, however they do it, as long as it doesn't hurt other people, I'm like pro that. Because that's a beautiful vibration to connect to.
I like that you call it, you name it vibration and it's beautiful. It's beautiful because that's what it is. It's energy. You're right.
And if you connect to that through Islam or Catholicism or Bikram yoga or playing golf or just barbecuing on a Sunday with your kids, that's God. And I think that is positive. That is really positive.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of being Jewish?
I'm a feisty dude. I like that the Jewish story and history is like one of survival and one of resilience. Mm-hmm. I don't feel passive in life. I don't feel passive in when I see injustice. And I think the Jewish people are very similar. We're just like, if we see injustice, we speak up, whether you like it or not. And maybe that's why we get hatred. I don't know. But I'm proud to be Jewish. I'm proud to be a part of the feisty, non-passive people.
If you had a wish for this documentary you made, what would that be? A dream come true from the documentary, what would that be as an outcome of it?
Again, I think if I can help one widow or widower or bereaved person feel a little bit seen in their grief, that's a win. If one woman watches this and she's like, oh my God, he gets it, or that's a win. There's no real monetary point of this. This is my tzedakah, I'd say. This is how I give back. I think getting it into the hands of people who want to put on screenings and then potentially raise funds for these organizations, like raising funds for One Family or IDF Widows and Orphans organization, that would be a physical way. But again, I think it's just a feeling, a takeaway from the film that if you just get a glimpse of what's going on and feel it a little bit more and you're educated a little bit more, that's a win.
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's basically gifting somebody something that you know that was important through when you were going through grief.
Definitely.
Yeah. If there was one person in the history of humanity that you can meet, who would that be? And what would you ask them?
I would want to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses. I think that would be, he's just an epic. What an epic story. I just think that uncertainty of being a leader is very tough, and whether it's in business or leading a family or leading a phone call, leading is tough. And I think it takes a lot of courage and in those moments of uncertainty, still following a North Star and still following like what you believe in. And yeah, I think that would be really an interesting interview.
What would you ask him?
Like, in your moments of doubt, how did you keep going? In your moments of, this is crazy, I'm going to go up against the emperor of the world, how did you say, no, I'm doing this?
Yeah.
And then keep going and not be like, you know what I said yesterday? I didn't mean that. But he just like, no, we're doing this. Kept going. And then sadly, he doesn't get to go into Israel because he like, the story of the, yeah, he doubts God being able to bring water out of a rock.
Or not even doubt.
He questions.
Or maybe he even heard a certain way and he's like, that's what I understood. That's what I understood.
And then God's like, wow. So I don't know. The faith.
Yeah, faith.
The trust.
Yes.
Even when it feels crazy, like even when it feels, yeah.
And unfair. So
and to lead a people, it's really tough. Leading people is really tough, especially when times aren't good.
Yeah, especially, right? Rob, thank you for doing this beautiful piece of art and sharing people's voices. I think one of the most healing things for people is to be heard. I'm learning from this podcast, listening to understand that sometimes we cannot change the reality, but just listening and being heard is majority of the healing and just feeling not alone. And I think you gifted that to the people in Israel. And maybe for people that are going to watch it, they're going to say, oh, this is what I need. I need to be heard. And maybe they'll go and find somebody to not be alone. Like you said, find the community, find the support. Find the people that understand your pain. Not that others can't support you, but finding the same, the person that went through the same experience is a different level of understanding. And I think there's also a different level of wanting to be with them because they get it.
100%.
So it's just a belonging. Brené Brown says, try not to fit in, try to belong. And because belonging is home. So I want to thank you for the people of Israel for sharing behind the scenes that we can, as you said, like witnessing it is a different level of bearing witness.
Yeah.
And I think we should all try to do it in a way. I don't know how we can all do it, but like,
we should. I think it starts just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Like, we all have this North Star in us where we're like, no, Israel has the right to exist. Israel has the right to defend itself. It's okay to be Jewish. Like, let's be proud to be Jewish.
Right.
Don't be afraid of that. Empower yourself in that reality. Don't be afraid. You're going to offend people. It's okay.
So thank you for being that loud voice and for sharing this story. We're going to put the link to your movie, to your documentary in the show.
Yeah, you can Google it. Just Google search Echoes of Loss, 8 Days in Israel. You can Google search my name, Rob Moore, and it'll probably pop up.
And but share
it. It's on
and
YouTube.
And if you want to say thank you to Rob, share it. Because the more people will see it, the more we'll educate the world, the more the people that are grieving will get compassion and support.
Yes.
So let's do the ripple effect. Like, as gratitude to Rob, share it.
I would appreciate it. Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at I am Rob Moore, or follow the documentary at Echoes of Lost Doc on Instagram. And please reach out. If the movie speaks to you or if this interview spoke to you, please reach out.
Thank you for being here, Rob.
Thank you.
It was so good to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well.
Bye till next time.
Am Yisrael Achai.
Amen. Leolam. Thank you for listening to Understand. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please hit that follow button on your favorite podcast app. This way you don't miss an episode and you help us grow. You are part of our growth. We appreciate your support and we hope you choose to listen to us on our next episode. We'd love to hear from our audience. If there's anything you would like us to research, to talk about, please contact us on our website, listeningtounderstand.com. And if there's any insight that you got from this and you want to share with others and you are happy for us to read it out loud on our show, send us your insights, send us your thoughts. We want to listen to understand. Bye till next time.